This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot
is
this the tiger.
The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's been a busy Friday, and it will continue to be a busy Friday over the next hour as you've tuned in to another edition of The Neutral Zone. But it is a two-man band this week. Josh Watson is going to be alongside me for the next hour. There's an empty co-host seat over there. Look, see, it's just over there. Have it in your mind's eye. There's one empty. Josh, how are you?
I'm all right, Brock. It's been a bit of a rough day. I had an industry exam that I had to write this morning, which did not go my way, but that's all right. I get to write it again. So all is well.
Yes, all is well. And it's tough when you have to write those industry exams and things don't go the way. I remember in school writing exams, like, and they'd say, oh, just study. And it's like, yeah, study the whole term. This is not as easy as it looks. And so I can empathize with you from back when I was in high school. I didn't do so much exam writing in radio broadcasting with Melanie Taddeo. We did a final podcast project, but no exam writing. It's tough. And thank goodness you're able to write it again, hopefully in the not too distant future. And you can put that behind you. And all things will be looking up, we hope.
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, they write them or they offer them every month. And it's 14 chapters of exciting insurance information. So I'll get through it one way or the other, and I'll get my license that I need. So it's all good.
Yes. There is always a brighter times around the corner. That is for sure. What is around the corner now is our headlines for this week. Let's do it. Another Paralympic Games is behind us. Canada finished up with 25 medals, 8 gold, 6 silver, and 11 bronze. Listen, I said early on that I would be happy if Canada got between 18 and 30 medals, and they hit my benchmark just perfectly. I think that Canada did an outstanding job. There are some medals that were left on the table, particularly a gold medal, which we'll talk about in a bit. But all in all, successful games for the Paralympic team. Congratulations to all involved.
Ollie Jepson had the honor of being the flag bearer for Team Canada and leading them into the closing ceremonies. She won Canada's first medal, a gold medal, and followed it up with silver in her other event. Molly is an exceptional skier considering her age, and I, for one, enjoyed watching her race. I think this is a great honor, and I am very, very happy that she had the pleasure of carrying our flag. I think she did it very well.
She did indeed. I would agree with you 100%. 7-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady says that leaving was the hardest part. Let's listen to more.
Tom Brady's retirement lasted 40 days. The NFL's all-time leader in touchdown passes and passing yards has announced he's returning to the Buccaneers for a 23rd season, saying on social media that he has unfinished business. Brady led the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl title following the 2020 season and the NFC South Championship last season. He won 6 Super Bowls with the Patriots. The decision comes days before the NFL free agency period begins. The Bucs are also hopeful star tight end Rob Gronkowski also returns. I'm Dave Ferry.
Look, you can say what you want about Tom Brady, whether you are pro Tom Brady or not. The stats speak for themselves. He is an amazing football player. I just fear that eventually, when he retires, he's going to be like Brett Favre and be the old guy there forever and ever and ever. I think he'll do it for a couple more seasons very well and at a high level, but I just hope it doesn't drag on for too long. But the game is better with him in it, at least for now.
Unfinished business, my hiney. Team Brad Gushue won their fourth Canadian championship, but this one seemed extra special as their vice skip was diagnosed with coronavirus just ahead of the championship weekend. The team had to play with just three men for the final three games of that championship, and they will now go on to represent Canada at the World Championships held in Las Vegas from April 2nd to 10th. I watched the championship weekend of this Brier, and oh my goodness, was it a display. This threesome, I don't know how they did it, Brock. It was absolutely incredible. I wish them the best of luck in Las Vegas, and their vice skip, Mark Nichols, I hope, will be healthy enough to travel with them.
Yes, I agree. And I have a vested interest in this team just because I watched them win the Brier in Kingston, Ontario a couple of years ago, and it was so wonderful to watch. And just their ability to be resilient and only be with three players was something to behold. Something else to behold is that the baseball strike is finally over. After a little over 3 months, the players and its owners have come to a new 5-year collective bargaining agreement. This will see a full 162-game season. The Toronto Blue Jays began their spring training today against the Baltimore Orioles and will open their season on April 8th against the Texas Rangers. I, for one, am so thankful this is behind us. Let's play baseball, and I am looking forward to see what the Blue Jays have in store. Let's check in on our Twitter poll questions. How did you take in the Paralympic Games? 43% of you said CBC TV and CBC Jam. Also, 14% of you said not at all. So very interesting poll results there as well. This week's question is a simple one. Do you believe the Paralympic Games was a successful one for Team Canada? Your answers there are simple, yes or no. Coming up after the break, we're going to be discussing the Paralympic Games, specifically the para ice hockey program. It's been 16 years since they've won their last gold medal. What has to change, if at all? We'll discuss right after the break here on the Neutral Zone. We'll be right back.
To get in touch with the Neutral Zone on Twitter. Number one, at AMI Audio. Number two, at Neutral Zone BR. Number three, at Neutral Zone CB. Number four, at Neutral Zone Cam J. And number five, at JWatson200. Now get out there and tweet one for the Gipper.
It's funny because I have the luxury of hosting and producing the Neutral Zone, and I tripped myself up just now by my own writing. It was like reading doctor's notes that I couldn't even decipher. I gave you, the audience out there, the wrong Twitter poll results because I made a mess of it on my script. So let's go back to this. How did you take in the Paralympic Games? 43% of you said CBC Gem and not at all. 14% of you said on television. That is the accurate results, and I think I've got that straightened away. I need to learn to read my own chicken scratch is basically what this comes down to. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone. I'm Brock Richardson alongside Josh Watson. And Josh, we're going to spend some time, and maybe we'll delve into the other parts of the Paralympic Games as well before we get a hold of Nico Cardarelli. But let's start with the what a lot of people consider the marquee event of the Paralympic Games, and that is the para ice hockey program. It has now been 16 seasons and 16 years and counting since Team Canada has won a gold medal at the Games. The question, Josh, that I have for you, first and foremost, Team Canada got shut out by United States by a total of 10-0 over two games. And they basically beat South Korea by the same margin, maybe a little bit more, but not much. So they basically had a goal differential of plus one or two, roughly speaking. What do you make of what you saw from this team moving forward into the games?
Honestly, Brock, I do not know what to make of this because I know a number of the guys who play on that team. They are very good hockey players. I don't know if this was a strategic issue and that the coaching staff didn't have a playbook for how the Americans were going to play. I don't know if it's the age of the team and perhaps they just can't keep up with the younger American team. I'm really kind of at a loss here. All I can tell you from watching those two round robin games and the gold medal game is that, yes, the South Koreans are a weaker squad compared to Canada and the U.S. Unfortunately, there's no way around that. It was Japan for a while. Now it's South Korea that seems to take up that third spot. South Korea is still a very good team, but they're not in the same class as Canada and the United States. So Canada should absolutely dominate South Korea. Having said that, what you saw in that series of games against the Americans was just a team that was beaten to the puck, that were forced into turnovers that shouldn't have happened. You saw shots that didn't hit the net as frequently as they needed to. It was just, it was a very perplexing tournament for this team. I remember you and I talked briefly during one of the games, and you were saying, like, what is going on here? And I said, watch when a turnover happens. Watch what happens. And what happens is players come together, the puck squirts free, and the Americans are on it like that. And they are down the ice, and they're sometimes on a breakaway, sometimes on a two-on-one, but they are always first to the puck. Is that an age thing? Maybe. Is that a feeding into the American trap? I don't know. I don't know the answer, but it is frustrating to watch.
And here's what stands out to me and always has stood out to me from watching these two games. In the gold medal final, Canada had not one, not two, not three, not four, but five power plays, including a 5-on-3. What did they have to show for it? Two shorthanded goals. Two. I could have told you.
Those shorthanded goals were against them.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Right. They just looked awful. And you could the first shorthanded goal that United States scored, you could see the balloon just And it wasn't a slow deflate. It was a, nope, we got scored on. It's popped. We're done. And then they came back and they got the second power play. And I thought, okay, if they can get one here, here's where this is going to look different. And I have some faith. And then they got a second goal scored on them on the power play. And I'm thinking,
that was the same power play. Yeah.
What am I watching here? Like, what's going on here? And it's like, this is not the team that we're accustomed to seeing. And maybe it is the team, unfortunately, that we're accustomed to seeing, because the Americans are making Canada look like Swiss cheese on the ice. And it's probably to no fault of the talent that Canada has, because they have lots of great talent, but they just were not hungry enough to get to the puck to want it. When you have five power plays and all you have to show for that is a minus two, like, like,
that's bad news. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't test their goalie enough that would even warrant anything. I mean, the puck was looking like a beach ball to their goaltender, and it wasn't even close. I mean, they weren't even getting quality shots. And let me give some credit to Canada here. The one piece of credit that I think they deserve to have. The first 5 minutes of the first period, I thought, okay, this is a team that looks good. They're getting to the puck. But this, as you point out, the second there was a turnover, their defense can't get back quick enough, and pop, there goes a goal, and that's it. And so what we're seeing from Team Canada is simply not good enough. And I don't think that the easy answer is, oh, we'll just get a coaching change. This is the second go around. I'm sure that's going to be the case here, the second quadrennial. But it's got to be looking deeper into your roster. Greg Westlake is retiring, and I feel bad for him retiring in the way that he did. I was really hoping that, you know, he could get a gold medal, but there's got to be some fundamental changes that happen here, almost from top down from this organization, because what we saw was god awful. Any further comment there, Josh?
Just something to bear in mind. Anybody who watched those games, I want you to remember who the commentators kept talking about for the Americans. It was Farmer and Roybal. The thing that Farmer and Roybal have in common, and I say this delicately, is that they are both double leg amputees. Your legs are approximately, based on some quick research I've done, about 17% of your body weight, roughly. So if you don't have to lug around 17% of your body weight, that's going to make you faster. Yeah. So in that instance, look at the number of players we had. We have single leg amps for sure, but we don't, as I recall it, have a lot of double leg amputees. And is making the team a bunch of double leg amputees going to solve the problem? No. It has to be a combination of things. Our players have to be fast enough to keep up with Roybal and Farmer, because they're the ones doing the damage. Or if we don't have players that can keep up with them, then our systems have to be stronger. And that's where I believe a coaching change will need to happen, unfortunately. Because I am not convinced that Ken Babby has the tactics to combat this. He's had two Olympic cycles to figure this out. And they do well at world championships. They won a gold in 2017, Canadians did. But for some reason, when it comes to Paralympics, we can't beat them. And whether it's his fault or not, somebody is going to pay the price for that. And it's either going to be veterans on the team, or it's going to be Ken Babby, or both.
And to me, it has to be both. If you're if Greg Westlake is retiring and doesn't pull a Tom Brady and come back and say, you know what, I'm going to come back and play. And maybe, Josh, and I'll present this to you. Could Greg be looking at the situation and in his own mind, and maybe we'll have Greg on in the future to have this conversation. Is it that he wants to see some fundamental changes? And so he said, for now, I'm going to pull back and see it. Or do you genuinely think that he has retired? And I know you're not in the mind of Greg Westlake, and that's fine. But your opinion on this would be what?
I think at some point, every Olympian and Paralympian, and you can speak to this better than I can, but I believe that every Paralympian at some point says, okay, I've had my chance to go for my dream. It's time to, quote unquote, grow up and be an adult. So I believe personally that if he says he's done, that he's done. I think he's, as I recall, he's in his early 30s. I believe he's married, if I remember correctly. So your priorities change when you get to that stage of your life. You start to think about making your career and having a family and all of those things. And unless you're in a situation where your partner also is a Paralympian or an Olympian, I'm not so sure that that dream stays as top of the list, I guess I'll say, as it might for others. So would I love to see Greg back? Absolutely. I think Greg is an amazing human being and a great hockey player. Will he come back? I don't think so. And is it because of the way things have gone? Maybe. But maybe he's just tired of the grind.
Yep. And two things I want to speak on here before we wrap is, number one, his wife, to my understanding and knowledge, is Sammy Joe Small, who was also a goaltender.
Sorry.
Is it not?
That's
okay,
Billy
I thought...
No, that's Billy Bridges.
Okay, I always get those two mixed up. Billy and those. Yes.
Yeah, so Billy is married to Sammy Joe. And so for them, I could see that dream still being more top of mind. But Greg, right, as I understand it, is not married to an Olympian. But please continue.
Right. But still, the point is that if you have that influence in your life as Billy does, it can make the change. He can be the person that, you know, she can lean on him and say, okay, I understand what the dream is like. If you don't have someone that has lived the dream, as Greg may not, then it's harder. And the second thing I want to say is that, you know, as a para athlete and an Olympian both, you know very well and very easily when the time is right. It is a feeling that I cannot describe, but it is almost like you just know when the time is right. And I believe this is where Greg is at this point. It's probably, you know what, I've done this, I've got a bunch of medals, and I've had a successful career. So to me, even though I placed that argument on the table, I just don't think that it's there anymore. And Sammy Joe Small and Billy may be having a different conversation because of their unique relationship of both being athletes, but I don't know that it's there for Greg. So that's kind of my feeling on everything that's happened and went on. So I believe we're done, and I believe there'll be some sweeping changes moving forward with the program. Coming up after the break, we're going to speak with Nico Cardarelli, who's the play-by-play guy for the Canadian Blind Hockey Championships. And we're going to get his feelings on the broadcast quality that CBC put out for the Paralympic Games. I know he has some pretty big thoughts. Stay tuned for that conversation and more on the second half of the Neutral Zone. We'll be back.
If you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now. 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Josh Watson. And we are pleased to be joined by Nico Cardarelli to preview the upcoming Canadian Blind Hockey Championships from March 25th to 27th. AMI Audio will be heavily involved in the broadcast. Some of the Neutral Zone gang will be there for the bronze and gold medal game on Sunday. And then Claire will be a part of the Friday broadcast, which we will get into in just a bit. Nico, thanks so much for joining us today. Happy to have you alongside.
Yeah, hey, gang. Happy to be on the show, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. If we can start, Nico, before we get into the Blind Hockey Championship, can we just talk a little bit about the coverage that was provided for the Paralympics that just wrapped up? I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I think overall it sufficed. I think there were room for major improvements, especially when you look at local networks, so to speak. I think south of the border, they did a really good job in terms of Paralympic coverage. I think NBC really crushed it on their stuff. I think overall, there's room for improvement, but at the same time, I suppose we've gotten more Paralympic coverage than we ever have, and that in and of itself is a phenomenal thing. And the fact that there continues to be major growth and investment into parasports is a promising, promising thing for anyone competing as a para athlete.
I just don't want to see us settle for the narrative of, oh, there's been more coverage than ever before, so, you know, we should be happy. When you consider, you know, 23 out of 24 hours had Olympic coverage, that is a far difference comparative to what we had for the Paralympic Games. But yes, for now, I agree and share your sentiment in the sense that, yes, we can settle on, we've had more than ever, but I think there's always room for improvement, as you mentioned. What do you believe the biggest highlight for Team Canada at these games were?
Jeez, I don't know. You're really putting me on the spot here with that one. I think, you know, I'm going to say just the overall medal haul. I think overall Team Canada performed really well. And I think there was a lot of opportunity for Canadians to be proud of our para athletes at these Paralympics.
Now, Brock and I just spent an entire segment debating about the Canadian para ice hockey team. They did win another silver medal at the games, but this is now 16 years without winning a gold medal. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
You know, I think that's a really tough position for the Canadian para team to be in. I think, you know, when you look at the sledge hockey team, they're really up against a juggernaut right now with that U.S. team. There's just so much depth and threatening offense there. And, you know, even in that gold medal game, right, the U.S. being outshot in the first period but still coming away with the lead. And it's tough when you're playing a team and you get outshot and you're losing, right? Or, sorry, you're outshooting them heavily, but you come away losing that period. So I think, you know, it's tough to say what Canada has to do. It may be a grassroots thing in terms of identifying, you know, talent going forward that they can come in, and whether it's bringing more speed into the equation or more of a physical presence. I don't know. Not that the goaltending was bad, but maybe you have to reassess everything when you're in this type of, you know, drought situation, because obviously Hockey Canada, I'm sure, would not be satisfied with, you know, like you said, 16 years without a gold medal.
We're joined by Nico Cardarelli, who is the Canadian Blind Hockey Championships play-by-play guy, which is creeping up ever so quickly. It begins on the 25th and runs right through to the 27th. Nico, switching gears to those championships, there will be a women's game featured on Friday. Can you talk more about this and what you know of and where the idea came from?
I think the idea is just something organic, in that there's always been female participation in blind hockey. It's just now there's, you know, the recruiting has gotten to the point where we've identified enough female players where they demand, you know, the need for their own game. It's, you know, fantastic to see, because ultimately that's what you want with any sport. You want it to go across the board for all people with all abilities, and for blind hockey to be able to actually facilitate a first ever, you know, fully female blind hockey game. It's a historic event, and it's going to be, I think, a lot better hockey than people are expecting. And I think it's going to be something that can be celebrated by everyone tuning in.
Now, Nico, we often will ask you when you come on to tell us about a player or two from the men's tournament that we should watch out for. But since we are talking about the women's game, are there some players on the women's game that we should definitely keep our eyes on?
I think there are a couple players that you can be excited for. And, you know, the first few names that come to my mind are Laura Mark, who's one of the phenomenal ambassadors for Canadian blind hockey, and she's led the way in terms of the female growth in the movement within the game, and she's really helped facilitate this game. So I think she's definitely a player to watch out for, because she's equally as productive on the ice in terms of her play. Amanda Proven is definitely a threat as well in terms of you know, some of the players in this women's game. She's got the ability to score. She'll be a threatening player, and she'll be able to pose an offensive threat on the ice for her team. The other player to keep an eye on in this game would be Emily McClain. And I really like the way Emily plays, because she's got a booming shot when she lets it fly, and she can provide a low slot presence that can be hard to come by at times. Some players don't want to engage in that style of play. So I think those are three players off the top of my head that could definitely make a splash at this historic all-women's blind hockey game.
I'm looking forward to listening to the broadcast. Some of those names that you gave, we've been familiar with in the whole tournament, Amanda Proven being one of them. If we switch gears to the rest of the tournament, can we talk a little bit about the format and players we should look out for in that tournament?
Yeah, and actually, you know what, just one more came to mind, because I didn't think about the Americans, but Christine Vanterini, who's now under a new name, I don't remember it offhand, but Christine, the scoring machine, will also be in that game, so that'll be exciting. Yeah, in terms of the format this year and, you know, what's going on in the general tournament, so there's going to be a few different divisions. And again, it's so exciting that the Canadian National Blind Hockey Tournament has the ability to facilitate play for all levels. So we've got children and youth divisions where they'll be getting significant ice time throughout the weekend, and those games will be streamed. Everything will be streamed. Obviously, Parasport TV will be producing that in conjunction with Canadian Blind Hockey, and we'll be streaming all the games from children and youth right up to the low vision and development division. And then, of course, we've got the open division. So the open division is going to be a four-team division, and that'll consist of some of the best players in the world for blind hockey. It's an open division, so it won't be to IIHF standards. But that said, it'll be a phenomenal style of hockey, because we'll be getting some players who have the ability to hit corners. They'll be able to dangle. They'll be able to rush up the wing. We'll be getting one-timers. We'll be getting gritty physical play. This is some of the best blind hockey in the world, and it's coming just next weekend in Toronto, and we're so excited to have it going on because, again, some of the top players, guys like Jason Juha, Kelly Serb, Mark DeMontet, there are so many players. We've got players from, I believe, 5 or 6 nations from around the globe coming to play in this event. So over 100 players partaking. It's going to be one of the best blind hockey tournaments we've ever put on and had the broadcast for. And the fact that it's coming up so soon is really, really exciting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. For me, I look at the fact that we've not done this in 2 years, and it's been put on hold, as has everything else. And I know for me, when I get there alongside you as the panel, and you know, there will be a little bit of rust and all that for us, even as broadcasters, and I'm sure yourself. Do you expect that rust to carry over onto the ice, or are these guys all pros and it's just a hockey tournament and they're going to get dressed, guys and girls, I should say, they're going to get dressed and put on their best show?
You know, it's an interesting point and a good one you bring up, Brock, because in a way, this tournament is going to be a celebration for the blind hockey community because it is the first event hosting Canada in terms of this scale, everyone coming together. So just that alone is a big celebration. But, you know, I know there's been challenges for certain players depending on their geographical location across the country, because obviously in Canada, we've all been subjected to different, you know, guidelines and enforcement, whether training facilities, ice rinks may have been affected, whether you can get ice times or not. You know, I know some players have been able to skate somewhat consistently, other guys and gals, not so much, but I think ultimately what we'll get is a very competitive open division, and we may see a little bit of rust early on, but I think that'll be shaken off pretty quickly because just the level of competition and, you know, the natural battle within all of these players, you see the fierceness in terms of the way they compete on the ice, and it's pretty phenomenal stuff. And once the puck gets dropped and it kind of, you know, gets clanking around and they're chasing it down, you know, it's just, it takes over in your veins, right? So it's going to be something to, you know, tune in for, and everyone's going to want to be a part of it. As, you know, 2022 Canadian National Blind Hockey Tournament, it's going to be something special. And I think, yeah, you know, once the competition gets going, we're going to see some really phenomenal hockey.
I couldn't agree with you more. I am so looking forward to being down there at the Mattamy Athletic Center and just sights and sounds again. It's been far too long since we've been all together, and Parasport TV has your visual coverage, and AMI Audio will have your audio coverage, and it all is going to work like a well-oiled machine. I just know it. It always has. Nico, looking forward to working with you Sunday afternoon, and thanks so much for coming on and doing this for us yet again.
My pleasure, guys. Likewise, and can't wait to catch up in person. Take care.
That was Nico Cardarelli, who is the play-by-play guy for the Canadian National Blind Hockey Championships, which begin just 1 week from today. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about Russia and Belarus and how they may take legal action for wrongful removal from the games. I know Josh and I have lots to say on this topic, and we'll have about 15 minutes to do so. So buckle up and stay with us. Welcome back to this program we call The Neutral Zone. And we've just been really having a great time over the last hour. And we've got one last segment to bring your way. And then you will be free to go on about your weekend. And if you're listening to this later on podcast and it's during the week, you can be free to go on about your week too. That's totally okay. I'm good with that. Josh, let's chat a little bit about some swirling rumors that Russia and Belarus may take legal action for wrongful removal from the games. What is your take on this?
Wow. I'd be really curious as to what the grounds are, because I don't think they can argue that there's no war. It's a little hard to hide what's going on right now. I think this is posturing, personally. I think if you're going to sue over the fact that you were removed from the Paralympic Village, then perhaps your countries could have observed the Paralympic truce and not started this war while the Paralympics were going on. You know, maybe.
Yeah. I think for me, that is the biggest thing that was dropped and the biggest disappointment in all of this. There is a truce. For those of you that do not know this, there is a truce for both Olympic and Paralympic Games. And honestly, this was not held through to the Paralympic Games, which to me shows nothing but a disrespect. It shows no more than it's about myself, it's about my needs, I need to have this war, and I'm not going to get into whether the war, you know, should or shouldn't be happening. I think that's pretty obvious. We're a sports program, but I just, it's really a disappointment that this truce was not held properly, and it's a shame. I think Ukraine did a wonderful job. They ended up in second place overall with the medal counts. I don't know how they did what they did. That is the poster of just strength and resilience, and it's amazing. I, for one, would not be able to do what they did if I did not know what my home and country would look like upon return. So all of that is great. I just think it was a shame that this had to take place over that, when there should have been a truce instilled and there just wasn't.
The only thing I would add to that is, I suppose if you're going to sue about anything, sue about the fact that you were brought to the games and then dismissed. Perhaps that's something you could be upset about. But I'm sure you're probably going to talk to this, having been in athletes' villages. From what I heard listening to people like Josh Duick, it sounded to me as if there was unrest in the village over them being there. And that's ultimately what turned the tide and basically forced the IPC to this move of removing these two countries from the games. I don't think they should have been at the games to start with, but that's me. I accept that other people may have different opinions, but I think that's the only angle I can see as a critical thinker that could be a reason to sue. Otherwise, I think this is frivolous, baseless, and shouldn't be worth anyone's time.
And again, the other argument could be made of, they said they were going to play, and then countries got behind and said, if they play, we're gonna boycott this Paralympic Games. And that was just within days of hours of them saying this. And then they turned around and said, no, we're not doing this. This is the end of the conversation. And to your point, actually, before we get into this next piece, I just want to ask you, and I'm pretty sure I know your answer to this. Do you think the decision of them being removed was based on the pressure of other nations and significant amounts of other nations declaring, yes, look, we're going to boycott it?
Yes, absolutely. I think that finally tipped their hand, because if you saw the news reports, the decision had been made to allow them to compete. Right. And I don't think there was anybody, at least not in my circle, who saw that and went, wait, you're going to do what? You're going to allow these people to compete when they're bombing a sovereign nation into the ground? That's not right. I definitely do think it was a result of the pressure from the nations in the village. Totally.
I do as well. And, you know, it's when you have pressure of significant amounts saying, if you don't do this, we are going to take this action. When you have more nations who would have boycotted than played, is from what I understand to be true. That's a problem for the Paralympic Games, Olympic Games, whatever games this had to have happened on. I think the same conversation would have happened had it been the Olympic Games. You know, people pressuring makes people change. When enough people, you know, put themselves forward and say, I'm going to do this, that makes somebody turn and look over their shoulder, not once, but twice, and say, maybe we should revisit this. You know, maybe we should, maybe this is something we should really look at. And I think that's sort of the fair point. I agree with you 100% when you say a lot of people around were thinking, what, you're going to allow this to happen? But I think everything was happening so very quickly and trying to get athletes in and all this sort of thing that they almost didn't have enough time to sit and think to themselves, okay, what is really best, until those other nations pushed themselves forward and said, no, this is what we're going to do, so you better make a change. Otherwise, you're going to see a lot of nations say, we're done with this.
Basically, when you have that many nations stand up and turn your games from this grand contest of sport into basically a sham, which it would have been had no one competed, then I don't think you have a choice. You have to follow what the majority wants to do. I just think it's really, really sad that it took the threat of a boycott by numerous large nations for them to come to their senses.
And I'm proud to say, from all reports that I've read and people that I have talked to, Canada was at the forefront early on, before the games even started, that said, we want this to happen. We want to be the one of their leading countries to say they do not belong in these games. This is the reason. So credit to Canada for at least being among the first nations to push this forward, because I think ultimately it was made in the right decision overall. The thing that I wanted to chat a little bit about, because I lived on two Paralympic grounds and I was involved in two games, and the vibe can change very quickly when things like this happen. Your distractions are so minute between really distracted and not distracted. The slightest thing can change you from being in your best distraction, being in your best mode, to being in a distraction mode. And this would be the thing that would tip someone over into being completely not distracted and off their game. And the Paralympics would not want it to be written in articles and news and things like that, oh, I believe I lost my medal because I was distracted by the vibe in the village and I felt, you know, unsafe. I didn't feel my well-being was, you know, taken first and foremost, all those things. That storyline never wants to be told at the Olympics, Paralympics, whatever. You do not want that in the media. And I think that's where this vibe came. And Josh Duick said it in our interview. There was a dark cloud. And I believe 100% that's to be true. People were feeling unsettled and unrest.
Yeah. The thing I think I'm most happy about is that the Ukrainian athletes got to the games at all. there was definitely talk that they were trapped and not going to make it. So, I mean, regardless of how they might have done, they did very well, but I was just glad to see them there.
And to wrap this thought up, I just want to say credit to the IPC for coming out and saying publicly, we are going to take care of Ukraine as a nation and make sure that they get home safe and sound, or wherever it was safe for them to be at that given time. And they didn't disclose where they were going to go in order to be safe for the athletes and everyone involved with them. So total, total credit to the IPC for making sure that that nation specifically got home safe and sound. It's incredible. That is the end of our show for this week. I would like to thank Josh Watson. Our technical producer is Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Janine. And our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend. Be safe and be well. And we'll talk to you next week.